Hi there. I'm Sue Elvis from the blog Stories of an Unschooling Family. Welcome to my podcast. This is episode 190. And today, among other things, I have a story that I'm going to share with you called Clock Watching. It's been a long time since my last episode, hasn't it? Yes, I haven't signed in to my account for a very long time, and my mic has been gathering dust. I actually thought my podcasting days were over. Now, if you are a regular listener of my podcast, you know that numbers are important to me. At one time, I wanted to get to episode 200. And then I stopped at 189, not even 190, a nice round number. So maybe that shows that my podcast has been waiting for me to return. But I'm going to talk about more about the future of my podcast after this story. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to read the story. I'm going to make a few comments about it. And then I will share some news. Yes, I must have a lot of that because, yes, I think my last podcast was recorded, September 2021, a year ago almost. And then finally, I have a couple of resources to share with you, a couple of things that I have found interesting, and maybe you will find them interesting too. So here we go, episode 190. Here is my story. Clock watching. I used to watch the clock a lot. Many years ago, when I was at school, every classroom had a clock on the wall. And each of those clocks had leaden hands that moved so slowly that I often thought I'd go crazy before they reached the half hour or hour position. At those magical points on the circle, a bell would ring, releasing us, sending us into a flurry of activity. We'd thrust our books into our bags and race for the door. A few minutes later, we'd flop onto chairs in an identical classroom in front of another teacher. Soon we'd all be looking at another leaden-handed clock. All those half-hour and hour and even two-hour lessons that had to be endured each day, week after week, month after month, year after year. Years of watching clocks and waiting for bells. I have to admit, it wasn't all bad. Occasionally, a teacher's enthusiasm was contagious, and I forgot to look at the clock. And sometimes, I made a real effort as I tried to take an interest in the lessons that I was forced to attend. For example, when I was about 13, I disliked art, mostly because of the teacher. She was always complaining and finding fault with my work. I was sure she didn't like me. I wondered why. One day, I decided to do an experiment. I did extra work on my homework assignments. I read and researched. I formulated a list of curious questions. Then, instead of enduring the lesson as I waited for the bell to ring, I looked as if I were very interested in it. The teacher noticed. She paid attention to me. She started to like me. My marks rose significantly. I suppose there's a lesson in there somewhere. Teaching isn't easy, especially in a system where everyone is ruled by clocks. Learning has to be efficient. Facts have to be packed into small spaces. There's little time to be curious and ponder and be fascinated by the world. Although my teachers did their best, were they sometimes just as eager as me for the clock hands to reach the right position for the bell to ring? In our early years of homeschooling, I discovered Charlotte Mason. I got very excited about her ideas and decided to try them out on my kids. I drew up a plan for each week and included all the required subjects such as maths, English, and history. I left time for regular drilling of maths facts and spelling too. I thought my kids would be delighted because we were going to read good books, recite poems, investigate art, keep nature journals, and do all kinds of interesting things. Looking at my plan, I could see my kids would have to do a lot of things each day. But that was okay, because each lesson was going to be short. Short lessons sounded sensible. I could present many subjects to my kids in a day without their attention wandering. Lots of variety. They only had to focus for a few minutes at a time, so they wouldn't need to watch the clock, hoping its hands would move very quickly. It was me who ended up doing lots of clock watching. I had to know the exact minute to say, "That's it, time to move on." I felt it was important to keep moving through the day's timetable and not get behind. We had to tick off all the boxes. Get the schoolwork finished as quickly as possible. We couldn't spend all day doing it. We had much more interesting things to do. We wanted to get to the part of our day when we were free to do what we wanted. Looking back, I wonder why I thought short lessons were a good idea. I know kids are capable of focusing for long periods of time. I've observed small children looking at worms or leaves or caterpillars or shadows or even a drop of water. They are captivated, absorbed. It's adults who want to rush past all the fascinating things. We're the ones in a hurry. We don't seem to have the same patience as our kids. If kids are good at concentrating, why are they presented with short lessons? Could the lessons be the problem rather than the kids? Are traditional methods of teaching failing to capture a child's attention? Are they foreign to a child's natural way of learning? I soon abandoned Charlotte Mason and her system of short lessons. I stopped making my kids learn what I, or Charlotte, thought was important. I threw my plans into the bin and bypassed all the boxes waiting for ticks. We headed straight for the good stuff. And we stopped watching the clock. We immersed ourselves in whatever interested us for as long as we wanted. We focused on our passions. No clocks, no bells, no moving on at an arbitrary moment in time. No getting behind, no having to keep up. The funny thing is, my kids ended up learning about many of the things Charlotte Mason approves of. I suppose that's not really surprising, because such things as poetry, literature, art, and nature aren't the exclusive property of a method or curriculum. They're part of the world. They're waiting to be discovered by curious people who are free to learn. So we no longer watch clocks. Unless, of course, we're boiling an egg. I wrote that story in May 2020. Yes, the infamous 2020, the year when my life tipped upside down and I lost the plot. Oh my, the last couple of years has been very difficult. But I shall get on to more of that in a minute. A few comments about my story, Clock Watching. As I was reading it, I was thinking about how I must have been pondering education and learning even when I was a young teenager. I do that all the time as an adult. I've done that for many years. That's why I blog and podcast and share unschooling, because I'm always thinking about how kids learn best. But I must have started that journey when I was a teenager and observed that our success as students, what we get passionate about, our success in, a teacher's success in transmitting a love of learning to their students, that does depend on the teacher mainly. A good teacher can pass on the excitement of a subject, and it's the attitude of the teacher as well. My art teacher, I felt she didn't like me. And that affected my marks. It affected the way I felt about the subject and the work that I was willing to put into that subject. But as a teenager, I did that experiment. Yes, I wondered what would happen if I went above and beyond what was required. What would happen if I asked the teacher some curious questions? And yes, amazing things did happen. I got good art marks. I started to enjoy art. The teacher started to enjoy my company. She appeared to like me. I don't think that it was my problem as such. I did something as a 13-year-old. I really think that it was the teacher who should have found a way to inspire me. There are some good teachers out there. Teaching is hard. I'm married to a teacher. My husband, teacher Andy, he's always looking for ways to inspire and encourage his students. But yes, I'm glad my kids haven't had to endure the school experience that I found very, very difficult. Yeah, I came out of the system not enjoying learning at all, and everything that I learnt that wasn't relevant to me, which was most of it, I immediately forgot. I didn't get a good education. So the other point I think was the one about Charlotte Mason. Yes, everybody, well, loads of people, are attracted to Charlotte Mason. And maybe that's because that she promotes beauty, truth, and goodness. Yes, who wouldn't be attracted to those? But as I said, beauty, truth, and goodness, all the good stuff in the world, art, literature, poetry, they're not confined to Charlotte Mason. She doesn't own them, or she didn't own them. She is not passing them on solely through her writings, her method. No, these things are found in the bigger world. And if we are curious people, we can discover them for ourselves. We don't need Charlotte Mason. Of course, some unschoolers aren't interested in poetry or things like Shakespeare, or even art history. But as I said, when we're enthusiastic, learning is contagious. If we're enthusiastic about something, it's quite likely that our children will pick up on our excitement and want to know more. And if they don't, that is quite okay. So that was my story and my comments about the story. Now I think that I might share a little bit of news. As I said at the beginning of this podcast, it has been almost a year since I sat down in front of my mic and chatted to you. I think the last episode I did was a combined one with my daughter, Imogen. I think we sat down together and chatted about all kinds of things. I'm not exactly even sure what the last episode was called. All I know is it was episode 189. Not very satisfying number. So here I am, 190. If all goes well and I publish this, I'll have a round number, 190 even, multiples of 10. Do I need to do 10 more episodes to get to 200? I know I'm crazy. I always think about numbers in the world. Also, I was talking to my sister the other day about how I am a grammar and punctuation person too. I always notice, especially mistakes that other people make, like on signboards. You know what I'm talking about. Maybe you notice them too. I get all upset about them and start to feel superior because I know where an apostrophe goes and it looks like somebody else doesn't. Maybe other people don't care. Maybe I'm making a big thing of something that's not really important. But yes, what has been important in my last couple of years, which I've missed, well, what I was missing, was my freedom. I found the lockdowns incredibly difficult to endure. We had harsh restrictions here in New South Wales, Australia. And at the beginning, I couldn't believe that our freedom could be taken away so easily. Yes, as I said to my husband, Andy, they can't make us stay at home. But they could. There was nothing we could do about it. I guess we could have protested and got imprisoned and given huge fines. Yes, I didn't do any of that. I couldn't even write about it. I got stuck for a couple of years. It wasn't just with podcasting, it was with my blog as well. But life is almost back to normal here. If you squint and don't focus too much on those signs that I can still see in various places about how COVID isn't yet over, keep on with the social distancing and masks and all that. If I squint and ignore and don't let those come in into my, if I don't see them, can't find the right words this morning, then I can ignore them and I just act as if life is back to normal and I'm coping now. But there's one other thing that I've been thinking about. Some other thing that might be a stumbling block to continuing forward. Well, there's two. First, if I got anything more to say. My youngest daughter, Gemma Rose, turned 18 at the beginning of the year. And I don't have any children anymore. All my kids are young adults. They're even older, sort of older younger adults. And I'm here. Well, I'm not here at home by myself because I have kids who come and go. I still got several who are here at home. But day to day, I can't write about their learning anymore, their experiences. After so many years of me sharing their stories, I think it's time that I respected their privacy. Being adults, yes, they don't have to be poster unschooling kids. They don't have to meet my readers, my listeners' expectations. They don't have to share what they're doing in their adult lives. So have I got enough to keep on sharing now that I'm no longer doing that? I mean, I could still share the occasional photo of my kids and maybe a little bit of information that I know that they wouldn't mind me sharing, but my source of stories has decreased enormously. So that's one thing. The other thing is money. Oh my, I got a shock the other day. I got a huge, huge bill for my podcast hosting fees. I've also got a bill for my podcast hosting fees, and in a few weeks I'll have a bill for my spam protection for my blog and my backup, back up in the cloud for all the blog related things. My blog is backed up in the cloud in case something goes wrong, but I have to pay for that every month. So there's a lot of bills that need paying, and I'm wondering, perhaps it's just time to close everything down and move on, do something else. Part of me feels a bit like a failure. I haven't, after all these years, been able to find a way to make my blog and podcast self-supporting. I have invested a lot of our family money into these things. And I'm not saying that I regret that, because I've had a lot of fun and learnt a lot while I've been blogging and podcasting. But I think it's got to the stage now where I don't want to put any more money into it, any more of our family money. I don't earn any money except a little bit from my books. And yes, this is my husband's hard-earned money that's supporting my mission of sharing unschooling with everyone. That's something I really got to think about. Yesterday, after I told my husband the bill was too big and I didn't want to pay this bill with his money. Well, it's not his money, it's the family's money, because what he earns is our money. But I am very aware that he works hard for that money. So I said, I'm not going to pay these bills. I'm just going to shut up shop, move on. And then last night he said to me, look, Sue, we'll find the money. Just pay the bills. I said, no. You don't understand. I don't want to do this. I don't want to spend the family money. Anyway, he didn't listen to me. I think he understands what I'm saying, but he's refusing to listen to me because he knows that even though I feel a bit of a failure at times, this is important to me. And I wondered this morning if I ought to look at the whole thing as not that he is paying for, well, family money is paying for everything, but that my husband is investing in my podcast and my blog. And I've got a bit more time to look for alternatives, look for other ways to earn a bit of money. Now, I've had a lot of offers for collaborations, sponsorships. I could write on various blogs or websites, get money for my efforts. I could advertise products on my blog. But the only problem is none of these things, none of these websites, none of these offers fits in with my view of unschooling. I feel I'd be selling out if I accepted a sponsorship from, for example, a curriculum company. I cannot promote a curriculum at the same time as writing about unschooling. So that's one thing that I'm pondering at the moment. If you have any ideas, if you've been in my situation, please head over to my blog and leave me a comment. I would very, very much appreciate that. Is what I'm doing worthwhile continuing? Is there a way that I can earn some money from what I'm doing? Would listeners and readers be willing to support me? Yes, a few questions are there. If I continue podcasting, I've had some new ideas. I might do a series of podcasts if I go ahead and base them around this new format, which I guess I've done before, but the last few podcasts were chats with my daughter Imogen. I thought that I might start with a story from my blog, then a few comments, then catch up with any news that might be relevant or interesting, and then finish with a couple of unschooling resources. So how does that sound? Would that work? I think that I need some kind of structure Structure and unschooling. Ha ha. A plan. Doesn't sound right, does it? But plans are useful in their own ways. And I think that it depends on who makes the plan. I have to make my own plan that suits me. If my kids make plans, they have to make them themselves. Yes, I can't make a plan for them, and their plans have to suit whatever they want to do. Yes, so there is a place for a plan, but not in the traditional kind of way. But if I had a plan for each podcast, I know that I need a story, make a few notes about the comments to do with that story. If I make a list of things I'd like to tell you about, and if I find a couple of resources to share, look, I've got a podcast, an episode. The question is, will you listen? Let me know. Please let me know. Well, that means I'm moving on. Probably got other news. I mean, how can we go through a whole year and not find things to talk about? There's loads of news I haven't told you about, but I can't sit here thinking about it. I would probably overwhelm you, and maybe it would be interesting to me, but not you. But if there is something that I think about, I can add other news items in future episodes. So, on to the next part of my podcast. Oh, I should have said before. Look, I should have looked at my notes. I was talking about Charlotte Mason in that story, and then I commented about Charlotte Mason. Well, I've actually done another podcast episode, and I've also written another blog post about Charlotte Mason. And the episode is 178, Strewing, Unschooling, and Charlotte Mason. And the blog post is called Unschooling, When Charlotte Mason Appeals to Our Hearts. And from what I remember, I read that story out in the podcast episode and then discussed it. So that was one of my own recommendations. Now on to a couple of other ones. I'm about to reread an L.M. Montgomery novel called The Blue Castle. I'm going to read it again because my sister is reading it. I recommended it to her, and she said, if I read it again, we could discuss it. And I think this is a wonderful idea. As I was saying to my sister the other day, we read Heidi together. It's a children's novel, but my sister missed out on it as a child. And, oh, I had such great fun, going back to Heidi and discussing all of the characters. And that was the good bit, discussing the characters. It's really hard to discuss real life people, isn't it? We could end up criticizing them, which is not it's not our right to do that. We learn from various people, and we learn a lot from characters in books. So characters in books are safe to pull apart. We can investigate their stories. What was their motivation in doing whatever they did? Did they do something good or something bad? Can we remember a time when we acted in a similar way? All those kinds of things. And we're free to do that because the characters aren't real. We can't hurt their feelings. So that's what I love about discussing novels with somebody. And my sister and I are going to be reading and discussing The Blue Castle. Now, this is, of course, by the author of Anne of Green Gables, but this book isn't as well known. My daughter, Imogen, she recommended this book to me years ago. She said, Mom, you should read The Blue Castle. And for some reason, I didn't. And then I picked it up, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago. And then I read it and I thought, wow, why didn't I read this before? You know how people recommend things and you think, nah, doesn't sound very interesting to me. And you can't understand why they are excited about it. Well, I'm so glad that I actually did read The Blue Castle. It's not a sort of like secondary book by L.M. Montgomery like I thought. It's a really good book in its own right. Now, some people describe it as a YA novel, young adult. And as my daughter Imogen told me in a podcast, she said young adult novels aren't just directed at young adults. They're for teens as well. You like 13-year-old, 14-year-olds. You don't have to be 18 or above to read a young adult novel. And you don't even have to be a young adult to enjoy these novels. You can be an adult. And so I really enjoyed The Blue Castle. Now, what is it about? Well, I'm going to read the Amazon blurb. Valancy lives a drab life with her overbearing mother and prying aunt. Then a shocking diagnosis from Dr. Trent prompts her to make a fresh start. For the first time, she does and says exactly what she feels. As she expands her limited horizons, Valancy undergoes a transformation, discovering a new world of love and happiness. One of Lucy Maud Montgomery's only novels intended for an adult audience, The Blue Castle is filled with humor and romance. But as I've already said, it's more of a young adult novel, I think, rather than an exclusively teenage novel or adult novel. And as I was researching, because I've decided to be good and write some notes so that my podcast makes sense, I'm not just drifting from one thing to another and saying to you, oh, I should have looked that up. So I did look it up. And I discovered something very, very interesting about The Blue Castle. And that is that for the very first time, there's going to be a feature film made of the book. Now, let me see. It's being made by Cinegriffon Entertainment. And it's coming out 2022, which happens to be this year. And I just told that to Imogen and she got so excited. I hope it's a good one. Recently we watched, well, I didn't watch, but my daughter Gemma Rose watched the latest version of Persuasion and was disappointed tremendously. So none of us have bothered to watch that on Netflix. No, I've heard a lot of bad reviews about it. We're not going to waste our time. So I hope this one will be good. Now I've got a quote here from Scott Aharoni, who is the founder of Cinegriffon Entertainment. And he says, Valancy's inspiring story is a beautiful reminder of how there is no such thing as wasted time. That no matter how old or late we may be, we can always start taking ownership of our own lives and live the one we've always desired or dreamed of having. Isn't that a wonderful statement? No matter how old or late, well, I'm getting into that category, though I have done a lot of the things that I want to do. I just can't decide what I want to do next. Right, that was one thing, The Blue Castle. And the second thing I want to tell you about is a book by Chris Packham called Fingers in the Sparkle Jar. Oh, I just love that title so much. Fingers in the Sparkle Jar. I wish I'd come up with that. That's just so magical. I just had to listen to the audiobook version when I saw that in our library. Now, do you know Chris Packham? Here's a little description about him. TV presenter and naturalist Chris Packham is a wildlife expert, photographer, and author with a passionate concern for conservation and the environment. He's British, and he happens to be the same age as me, having been born 4 days after me. I noticed that this morning when I was getting that information for you so I could read that out. The other interesting thing about Chris Packham is that he has Asperger's. And he has made a movie or a documentary called Asperger's and Me. Or is that Asperger's and Me? Not quite sure how you pronounce that. Maybe different people, different ways. And the documentary is really, really interesting. And I think it relates very well to unschooling and how we accept our kids. Should we change our kids who are wired, quote unquote, differently? I don't like that word, but yeah, you get the idea. And this is what the documentary is about. Is there some therapy that Asperger's children should undergo to assimilate them into society so that they get on better? Or, as Chris Packham thinks, should we celebrate each and every one of us, regardless of how we're wired? Because by changing people or suppressing parts of people, we don't get the benefit of their gifts. They aren't allowed to share their gifts. They're not valued. And how would the world be if we were all the same? Anyway, I just thought that you might like, first of all, to read Fingers in the Sparkle Jar. If you listen to the audio version, you will hear Chris Packham telling his own story. It's the story of his life from the time he was a little boy interested in the environment, all things nature, and how he found it really difficult at school and to make friends and to be accepted. Everybody thought he was strange. But he went on as an adult to become a TV presenter, probably something that nobody expected at all. And he's got a wonderful career. He's happy with who he is and he's doing wonderful work. And he found his place in the world. And that's what I think sometimes we all hope our kids will find their place in the world. And maybe sometimes we don't trust that they will. So we want to change them, make them more like everybody else, more appealing, maybe more sociable, whatever. Squash all those quirky things about them, the things that make them unique, the valuable things, squash them flat, make them like everybody else. So yes, I would recommend that. Oh, a bit of a sad story in some places, a bit confronting in places. But yes, wonderful book. And then, of course, there's Asperger's and Me, the documentary or the movie. And I watched that on YouTube. If you Google it, you'll probably find it somewhere online. So that's it, peoples. My first podcast for almost a year. I didn't do it bad, did I? I'm not going to do a lot of editing. I'm just going to take out a couple of pauses where I was looking through my notes, I think. I am trying not to be to be too much of a perfectionist, is that right? Because it takes time and effort to appear perfect. And sometimes there's no reason to do that, is there? Maybe it's better to have podcasts which, you know, have a few mistakes in, a few ums and ahs, and going over sentences a couple of times as I try and find the right words, than it is to have everything word perfect but never get an episode. Yeah, frequent or very infrequent, that's what I've been thinking about anyway, that how we can let perfectionism get in the way of the things that we are trying to do and share with other people. It holds us back. Well, I've shared a lot of thoughts this morning, probably more than I expected. I hope that you have enjoyed this episode, and please let me know if you did. It would be so, so, so encouraging to get a comment from you. So my blog, you know, is Stories of an Unschooling Family. I am back on Instagram. I'm not very good at social media, but I'm still plodding along there at Stories Unschooling Family. And I tried a live Instagram video this morning. That was fun. That was my second one. So I'm learning new things, trying new things. And the only other thing is my books, Curious Unschoolers and Radical Unschool Love. They're available on Amazon. And please, please, please go and have a look at them if you haven't already got bought copies. Your support, you could support me tremendously if you felt that you would like to do that by looking at my books and maybe buying copies of them. So, my friends, I might be back with another episode. Yeah, we'll see how things go. So until next time, don't forget to live a life of unconditional love.